Tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We're getting on the phone with Doug Fine for our Hemp Day Hump Day update. He's got a lot of information to deliver to us, all sorts of things he's been doing in Oregon and Kentucky. We've also got a update on the book, Too High to Fail, some new additions that we'll be talking about. We've got Doug Fine on the line. Doug, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Russ, on Hemp Day, Hump Day.
All right, glad to have you here. We've got a lot to talk about. We want to remind folks, too, that we can take some questions on industrial hemp if you've got them. Load them up in our chat room or call us live at 971-533-7111. But let's start with Doug here and what he's been up to. It's been gorgeous out here in Oregon. I imagine things must be okay in New Mexico as well. But you travel so much, I'm not even sure where I'm talking to you. Where are you at right now?
You are talking to me in New Mexico, where I've got to get the heck up to Santa Fe because our S-94, our hemp cultivation bill, is going to the full Senate cruising through committee, but there's evidently some folks on the House side that need to be talked to. So I'm bringing my family to the Roundhouse, and that is how we're starting the first legal harvest hemp-bound spring tour that then moves on to Minnesota. Very excited, honored to be at the University of Minnesota's Bell Museum for an evening program, Café Scientifique, co-keynoting with none other than George Weeblin. You know who he is, Russ?
No, I've never heard of him.
He is, as far as I know, other than the University of Mississippi distributors as part of the Carter-era care program of the, you know, the joints going out to Irvin and McCann, the only federally authorized psychoactive cannabis cultivation researcher. He's really knowledgeable and clearly states the genetic sides of it, which is really interesting as we talk about cannabis hemp and the unity and issues amongst, you know, different varieties of the cannabis plant. So I'm excited for that one on the 17th, then 28th, back to the Beaver State, my favorite places on earth, for the Oregon Hemp Convention, and then excited for April 4th, Northern Colorado Hemp Expo. That one is like looking to be quite a blowout, like in a good way. I mean, unbelievable stuff from a hemp car there. A lot of great speakers, local congressman, Derek Polis, big supporter of cannabis and hemp, as well as great panels that I'm honored to be emceeing and moderating, and Bob Marley's grandkid for music.
Oh, right on. Now, this Oregon Hemp Expo and this Northern Colorado Hemp Expo, what cities are those at?
The Oregon Hemp Expo is in Portland, March 28th, and I believe March 29th. That's a nonprofit thing. Bring a can of food. Check out, I think there's an OregonHempConvention.com on the speaking webpage. And Northern Colorado Hemp Expo, and I think there's a NoCoHempExpo.com. Google that. That one is in Windsor, between Denver and Fort Collins, in a rural area, and big Budweiser convention center kind of thing. This thing is all out.
All right. And I know you've been working with folks that are doing the pilot projects in Kentucky and in Oregon. Let's start with Kentucky. What's the status of hemp in Kentucky right now?
I should have news in a couple of days. The program was overwhelmed with applicants this year, and the department has done a fantastic job. Very supportive of hemp, of course, in Kentucky. Getting to the stage now where I think in the next week or so they're expected to issue permits. I think up from the half dozen projects last year, they have over 300 applications this year, if I'm not mistaken. I'm part of two of them. One of them has already been approved. It's a little token bit of Kentucky hemp from 2014. Thank you, Mike Lewis. That's going into this first legal harvest 20% hemp printed document that I'm putting forth here in the next couple weeks. Pre-orders on at DougFine.com. The second Kentucky hemp project I'm involved in personally is an effort to put the tri-cropping model presented in Hempbound, my previous book, into practice in the real world to try to, under research provisions, create a prototype whereby there's value-added processing for seed, flower, fiber, you name it, as well as energy from waste biomass for farming communities around the world. We're going to try to do a prototype in Kentucky. Moving 3,000 miles west, as I'm going to be doing back and forth a lot over the next few months, it was a no-brainer, as how anybody who knows and refers to him, to be associated. Well, first of all, I'm trying to help the whole program get seed, which is a real interesting thing, a real interesting process that we could do a whole segment on maybe next time, about trying to get seed in under accordance of the federal legalization of hemp under 7606 of Section 7606 of last year's Farm Bill. But and so I'm actually trying to help the whole program individually, working with a number of farmers, but in particular excited to be working with Oregon's first state permittee for hemp cultivation in modern times, 64-year-old Edgar Winters, who first cultivated hemp at age 7 in Alabama. And he's a master gardener, and I have a lot to learn from him. He really knows what's happening in the ground, from how to plant to how to store it, for, you know, seed to finished product. So that's exciting. I hope that we get some seed into Oregon soil this year, and I'm confident we will.
You know, there's some controversy here in Oregon about that. I got to see you and I got to interview Edgar Winters while we were there at the International Cannabis Business Conference in San Francisco. And some Southern Oregonians I'm in contact with were really upset about both interviews, upset for the idea that they were going to plant 25 acres of hemp in Southern Oregon and possibly through cross-pollinization ruin some of the outdoor Southern Oregon recreational and medical marijuana crops. One comment you mentioned was, I hope that I turn out to be wrong and it wasn't a bad thing to do. What's the latest on that controversy and people's fears about this cross-pollination?
To me, the biggest, I'm very, very glad that this discussion is happening. And to me, the biggest and most important outcome of this discussion now amongst what are essentially cultivators of simply different varieties of the same plant, is that we show those of us, and that probably includes everybody listening to this, and I know it includes you, Russ, many or most of us got involved in ending cannabis prohibition because of our belief that not only are there positive economic sides and positive public safety sides, but that a plant in which cannabis substitutes for, let's say, alcohol and or prescription medication in some situations. Hey, alcohol can be fine for some people in some situations, and prescription medications save people's lives all the time. But for those who want to reduce that either alcohol or prescription medication, and with cannabis, we believe that is going to result in a better overall society. We can refer to that Florida case. I'm sure you probably already talked about it in today's show, but the acquittal of a medical cannabis patient for cultivation in Florida, even though there's no medical cannabis law, and it was about a better way, a better society. So that's what I think is the most important thing to come out of this. That we show the world. That because what the okay, this is really important point, Russ, and I appreciate the time to verbalize this so that folks can hear this. The world doesn't know about or necessarily really care about the lifestyles of outdoor cannabis farmers in Oregon as they come above ground. And everybody in listening to this and all of us involved in this care passionately about that culture. I was embedded for a year with it for the book Too High to Fail in the southern part of the Emerald Kingdom in Northern California, Mendocino County. And this is a lifestyle that I shout out all the time. It's vital. It's absolutely vital for sustainability reasons to have locavore outdoor cultivators growing under God's sun using good cultivation techniques as cannabis comes above ground. That is as vital as anything that we can talk about hemp. It's hugely, hugely important. And so, but the wider world watching the discussion doesn't know, never is going to know or hear about any of that. What is vital for me to them, to the world to hear is that different people involved in cultivating different parts of the cannabis plant. I'm interested in federal legalization in all parts of it, but all people discussing it resolve it and show that there is a reason why cannabis was legalized. It's making people even do business better and agriculture better. If the headlines are negative and the argument is divisive, that's all anybody hears. It is candy to the ears of the last taxpayer-funded liars of the drug war, trying to extend their salaries, expend their speaking fees, expend their taxpayer-funded livelihoods on cannabis prohibition to be able to say, look at this, they're fighting with each other already, different kinds of cannabis. That's what headline writers love. It gets clicks. I say, let's not give them that. Let's give them, we sat down and talked and found a way that it all works. Because I can't speak for Edgar. I'm really excited to wherever he plans to learn from him this year. But I'm not dedicated to one spot or another. I'm dedicated to us all discussing this and using the latest science. One or two last points, if I could, Russ. One is my understanding and awareness of what the realities are in terms of different kinds of cannabis playing nice with each other is it's developing all the time. A year or two ago, and indeed in Too High to Fail, I mentioned California's failed 2011 hemp legislation that would have segregated counties in California for hemp versus psychoactive. And there's the old cliche amongst psychoactive cannabis farmers, hey, worst thing the DEA could have done to the drug war is drop hemp in, blah, 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 dilute THC. There's some truth to that, but this actual science is way more true. And Oregon has a long history of specialty seeds that have to protect their pollen from one from the other, but more even important than science. I hope the science gets up. More important than that is people feeling heard and all things discussed. I don't have an investment in one side or the other of this. We win when everybody is happy on this and the world sees us smiling with our arms around one another in photographs and not being divisive. So that's why I'm looking forward to communication amongst all sides, and I'm confident in a good resolution of this issue.
All right. Doug Fine, author of Too High to Fail and Hemp Bound, our expert on Hemp Day Hump Day. You can check him out at DougFine.com and follow him on Twitter at Organic Cowboy. I'm sure we'll see you soon. Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference. Will you be there in Eugene?
Unfortunately, I won't be there for that one. That's when I'll be in Minnesota for the University of Minnesota event. But send me good energy for that and wish I could be. And see you guys there at the end of the month.
All right. Thanks, Doug Fine. Thanks so much for everything you're doing out there. And we'll be in touch with you in a couple weeks for our next Hump Day, Hemp Day update.
Thank you, Russ, for all you do. Bye-bye.
All right. Stay tuned, folks. We got time for a radical rant here at the end of the show. We are going to nerf the world for Drug Czar Botticelli, lest he return to the bottle. Stick around.
Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.